It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Glenn Washington has a way of catching people's attention and not letting go, of drawing listeners deep into an idea or a story, of making us want more and leading us toward unlikely conclusions. Every episode of his public radio show and podcast, Snap Judgment, is different from every other episode, but great storytelling is at the heart of it all. And Snap Judgment is coming to Iowa live on stage at the Englert Theater in Iowa City on November 1st. Glenn Washington is on the line with me now from Oakland, California, where the show is based. Hello, Glenn.
Hello, hello.
Thank you so much for talking with me today. And I'm going to force you to start by telling a story that I know that you've told thousands of times, but we're going to go back in time to when you first got involved in public radio. Tell me how this happened.
You know, I was minding my own business, and I mean this, I was literally minding my own business. I was listening to one of the early podcasts, and I heard about this contest. It was a contest for, they were looking for someone who was hosty, they called it. And it was public radio stalwarts like Ira Glass and Terry Gross were saying, if you think that you have what it takes, send in a submission to this contest. And really, I was just doing it to preserve my right to complain. You know, because us public radio subscribers, and I hope that you are one, people who send in that check every month, sometimes we just want to make sure our voice is getting heard. So I said, look, I can't disparage the programming if I don't go ahead along with this challenge, which I did. I went ahead and sent in my little tape, and I forgot about it. And about 3 months later, I got a phone call. I was eating Chinese food at a restaurant in Berkeley. And it said, congratulations, you're one of 10 finalists nationwide. But I knew better, right? Because my buddy is a trickster. So I said, nice try, Mark. And I hung up the phone. And then they called back up and said, we don't know who Mark is, but you want to do this or not? And that kind of started me into public radio, really, that whole contest.
So you apparently had hostiness, but what were you doing at that time? What was your job? What was your career?
My job, I was running a nonprofit. I was running a child welfare organization. It was called the Young Entrepreneurs at Hawes. It was out of Berkeley, out of the University of California, Berkeley Business School. But most of my career had been in some sort of nonprofit management of some sort. And I was nowhere near media, but at the heart of what I was doing was advocacy. And when you don't have any money, any big donors, or, you know, a whole lot of people behind you, oftentimes the only currency that you do have is storytelling, making sure you tell a story that can actually hit the decision maker where they live, where they are, where they breathe, what they love. And that was kind of how that was my background in, you know, telling stories. But in truth, the real deal is that I learned storytelling the old-fashioned way, which is that I grew up in an apocalyptic, end-of-days, white supremacist Jesus cult.
Now, that's not the old-fashioned way for learning to be a storyteller. You're going to actually have to tell us a little bit more about that. So you actually did grow up in a cult, the Worldwide Church of God.
Yes.
Okay. So tell us a little more about that.
Well, again, I was born into this organization, essentially. It was a group that taught that the world was coming to an end and that I was one of a select few people who had received the special message that might save me from the terrible catastrophe that was supposed to befall everybody else. Essentially, I grew up thinking I was Harry Potter, and you all were Muggles. And I was a true believer until my late teens. I thought that what they were teaching, along with some things that I did disagree with, but I thought that the basic message that I was hearing was right until I didn't anymore. And that was it was a big deal for me walking away from the organization.
And so I want to dig into that a little bit more, but you and your family were drawn into that because of an incredible story, right?
The story was that, you know, we thought that Herbert W. Armstrong was, in fact, a storyteller extraordinaire. He was the founder of the organization. And when I was a kid, I remember being in church and having the pastor say that if you think we're going to make it through the 1980s without seeing the return of the Lord Jesus Christ, well, you got another thing coming. And I didn't believe that I was going to live out my teenage years. I thought that the world would have been over by then. I thought that everything was temporary. And we were, you know, everything for us felt temporary. We were encouraged not to make long-term plans. We're encouraged not to buy homes. We're encouraged, you know, not to necessarily pursue higher education, because what would be the use in that? The end time was nigh, and best to get ready with the Lord. That's what we spent our time doing.
So when did that fall apart for you?
When I was in my late teens, I went to my then pastor, and I was asking him some questions about where the Bible came from. Because the truth of the matter is, no matter what your religion might be, there might be some things that might not hold up to the strictest scientific scrutiny that are part of your belief system. And I was asking him some things about this, and he said, look, and he went, and again, to his credit, and he gave me a book. And because I was asking him about the Bible specifically, and one of the things that we had to do in my organization was essentially memorize the Bible. And, you know, I think that the older generation kind of was making themselves, they didn't understand it, but they were undermining themselves at the root, because a kid can memorize things in a different way than an adult can. And they were raising a whole generation of kids, my generation, who could cite book, chapter, verse of the Bible. And when I started asking some serious questions about it, he gave me this book, and it was called Who Wrote the Bible? And I read that book, and I read it again. And after that point, for me, my association with the organization was pretty much done.
Now, tell me how that turned you into a storyteller.
Because when you tell people that Jesus is going to be here next week, and Jesus does not show up, then you've got some real explaining to do and rhetorical gymnastics to get over. And the things that they would do and say from a narrative perspective, brethren, your prayers and offerings, especially your offerings, have saved the world for another spell. If it wasn't for you and your faith, the whole world would have been destroyed. I want you to give yourselves a big round of applause. Because of your faith and your concern for your fellow men, we are here another day. And brethren, this time is short. And that's why I'm asking you to dig deep today. And be sure that we get this message across. The Lord loves the kind that jingles, especially loves the kind that folds, brethren. Yeah, you gotta dance. You gotta do that stuff. And I thought that my childhood was wasted. And you could argue that perhaps it was, but at the same time, I studied at the feet of masters from a narrative perspective. And now, you know, I don't want to start anybody's cult, but it is funny that the stories that allowed me to start this show were definitely born of that experience.
I'm talking with Glenn Washington. He is the host of Snap Judgment. And Snap Judgment is coming to Iowa. It will be live on stage at the Englert Theater in Iowa City on November 1st. There are still tickets available to that event. And Glenn and I will continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest this hour is Glenn Washington. He is the host of Snap Judgment. It's a unique, themed, weekly storytelling show on public radio. You can hear it Saturdays at noon on IPR News and Studio One stations. And Snap Judgment is coming to Iowa. It will be live on stage at the Englert Theater in Iowa City on November 1st. Tickets are still available to that event. And Glenn, just before the break, we were talking about the unique circumstances you grew up in a religious community or a cult. And you spent your childhood preparing for the end times. You did not spend it dreaming of what you wanted to be when you grew up. So once you left, what was that period of self-discovery like, finding out who you were as an adult?
It was very, very tough. I mean, because I had been trained to believe that, you know, if I walked away from this thing that, you know, fire would rain down from hell, demons would spring up. And, you know, when I realized that maybe I felt when I walked away and these bad things didn't occur and I started easing into my new life as a non-believer, I just felt fooled. I felt tricked and I felt angry. I felt like I can never give someone that type of power over my mind again. And yeah, I didn't want anything to do with that organization. And it is funny, it was a little while ago, I got a phone call and it said that they're having a reunion. And I did not, I was like, no, thank you. No, thank you. It was a union for the youth group. And I was like, nah. But then my friends here, they're like, come on, Mr. Storyteller. How are you going to not go to the thing? I thought you're the storyteller guy. So I was like, all right. And I flew to Michigan. I drove out to this little VFW hall where they were having the event. It was cold. I'm outside just standing in the cold, not wanting to go in. And when I opened the door and you hear this Glenn and the love that was in there, it was like being Norm at Cheers. It was just overwhelming. And the hugs and the kisses and the crying. And we just thought, this was just a youth group. It wasn't the olders. It was just the people who grew up from as kids. And we just all squeezed each other and hugged and cried together. And it was wonderful. It was so wonderful. And then I sat down and I was sitting down to eat my little chicken dinner or whatever. And the woman next to me, she raised a glass and she said, can you believe that we grew up in that cult? And the woman across from us said, what cult? And as close as we were, this divide, this universe-size divide was still there. And, you know, different worldviews means you're living different experiences.
Let's talk about, go back to that talent search for somebody
sure.
with hostiness. So you entered that contest. You're one of the 10 finalists.
Yeah.
Did you have an idea for a show at that point?
Yeah, I had an idea for a show. It was called Snap Judgment.
you had that idea before even entering?
Well, I wanted to do a storytelling show of a type. My issue, especially at the time, was that the life that I knew, the people that I knew, weren't necessarily being reflected in what I heard on public media. And I love public media. I was a huge supporter of public media. I just didn't see myself there. And so I wanted to do something that was more musical, that didn't focus on necessarily celebrities' versions of events, but trusted regular people to tell their stories and trust that those stories would be extraordinary. I don't think now that you should have to be a politician or a hit music maker or whatever it may be in order to have a story that has impact with someone. I really want to make sure that we told stories from regular folk because I don't think there is such a thing as a regular folk. I think everybody's extraordinary. I think everyone has a story to tell. And I think that storytelling itself is the closest thing that we have to telepathy. It's the best way I can get in someone else's head or understand what it's like to be someone else. I mean, I remember actually I was listening to Crossfire, where you have these two idiots and they're braying at each other about some nonsense, and no one in the history of time has ever had their mind changed by watching Crossfire. You only get hardened into your position. But storytelling, if someone tells you a story, there's something magical about it. There's something that lets you put down those inhibitions and let you live through someone else's experience. And maybe at the end of it, even if you maybe you don't change your mind, you can see the world from someone else's point of view. I think that's magic. I think that the big thing that we're missing right now in the world, especially in our current political environment, is empathy. And I think that the only way we're going to be able to bridge those empathy gaps is with narrative, with storytelling, with listening.
When This American Life came about in, that was the mid to late 90s when it came on the airwaves. And of course, that was revolutionary. You know,
yes.
We were not doing anything like that. We hadn't heard anything like that.
Yes.
So you came into an environment where This American Life was maybe not old news, but had been around and was kind of the elephant in the room.
Right.
What weren't you hearing in that format that you thought, hey, I could do that? I could take it farther.
Ira Glass is maybe the best features reporter on the planet. He is a reporter extraordinaire, and he aims his reporting prowess on some very human and humane topics. I have never been a reporter, nor do I want to be a reporter. I always want to find the story. And it's not, and I think it's just a matter of degree on how we aim our various, you know, talents. But the core for me is a first person telling of the story. Reportage is a really useful tool for getting at the facts of a story. I always wanted to hit at the heart. I wanted to be as smart as anything that you'd ever listen to, but with a very, very different target. I want to hit you in your heart. I want you to laugh and cry, scream and holler when you listen to Snap. And I wanted to give you an immersive experience as well. One of the things that happens here at Snap is that when I first was listening to This American Life, which I love, and Ira has been nothing but a real champion for Snap. Early on, he was a huge champion for the show, and I really appreciate that, and because he knew there was room for more than one type of storytelling in the world. And one of the things that we did, like when he was using maybe, you know, four or five pieces of music per episode, we wanted to make music. We wanted to tell the show almost as dual narration. And so instead of four or five pieces of music, we would use upwards of 120 individual pieces of music. And now we actually create an original score from top to bottom, done by this amazing team we have here at Snap, to really immerse you in the tale. The whole soundscape is created to put you where the story lives. And I don't think that there is a show right now that focuses on sound in the same way. And it's something that we wanted to do from the beginning, to really create these movies of the mind, the cinema of sound. How do we drop someone into the heart of what's happening? Number one, let's cut out the boring parts. But number two, let's make it feel through sound like they are living the story along with the storyteller.
My reaction the first time I heard an episode of Snap Judgment was, wow. And then I thought, this is incredibly ambitious. And then my radio producer brain said, how on earth are they going to sustain this? So give me some insight. I mean, this is, and of course, you're many years down the road now and you have sustained it. But what is your process? How do you make an episode of Snap Judgment?
Yeah, and I will say this. This is, you're not the only one who thought that. And I think that the good news going into it, or the unfortunate news, was that we didn't, myself and my partner, Mark Ristich, we didn't have a background in radio, and we didn't understand how hard it was going to be. Our deadline for sending the show to the world, we had to have the show to the NPR feed, I believe it was at 6 a.m. every Friday morning. And we were making that deadline during their first season by maybe 30 or 40 seconds. It was not uncommon to send an email out at 2:30 in the morning and have it responded to by five different people by 3 o'clock in the morning. The initial team that came in to make this show work was just this incredibly ambitious, hardworking. Everyone knew that this was kind of a shot, a chance, and they just put blood, sweat, tears, soul, family, everything into it. This small little band of people just really punched way over their heads in order to make the show work. And I can't tell you how grateful I am for that energy, that sizzle, that experimentation that we had to do. The good news was that no one was paying attention to us those first 2 years, and it really gave us room to figure out what the show was all about.
Where do your stories come from? I mean, we know that many of your stories come from you and your life or your connection to something. But I've looked at your website, I've seen what you're asking for, but do you go out, are you actively searching for stories, or at this point, do many of them come to you?
No, we do have to go out and make most of the stories. We have to find them ourselves. I think that's the part that I would say is the curse of this American life. People know how to pitch to IRA. They don't necessarily know how to pitch to Snap.
Okay, so tell me how to pitch to Snap.
Well, we're looking for something a little bit different. We want a first-person story that, you know, from the person that lived it. You know, I want you to grab me by the throat and with a beginning that's going to really suck me in. I want to be in an environment that I might not know anything about. I want the person to grow along with the story, to change in relationship to the story, to the things that happen to them in the story. They're gonna not remain the same. And again, that I want a twist. I want something I don't see coming. And then I want to feel like the story has come to an emotionally satisfying conclusion. But now, oftentimes, you will find a more traditional way of public media telling a story is there's a little bit of story, a little expositional story, a little expositional story, and then at the end of it, there'll be someone who will wrap it up with a bow. What you won't find on Snap Judgment is me telling you what a story means. I will never, ever, never, never, ever, ever tell you what a story means, because there is this gap. There's this little gap between the storyteller and the listener. And if you get in there, and people themselves, everyone listening is a meaning machine. Meaning, they're looking for meaning. They're looking for meaning in every single thing they hear. What does it mean? 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 If I tell you what a story means, your mind stops. If I let that ending end on action, end with the person, and I don't tell you what it means, all of a sudden, that story has been transferred to you. If I tell you a story about my mother, you think about yours. If I tell you a story about my last trip, you think about your last trip. And I don't want to stop yourself from inferring whatever it means to you. I want that transfer to happen. I need that telepathy to happen. That is kind of the core of what Snap Judgment storytelling really is. How do I make this story your story? How do I give it to you? And we everything that we do from a technical perspective, from a storytelling perspective, is all about transferring this story to make it someone else's lived experience.
I'm talking with Glenn Washington. He is the host of Snap Judgment, a weekly themed storytelling show on public radio. You can hear it Saturdays at noon on IPR News and Studio One stations. And Snap Judgment is coming to Iowa. It will be live on stage at the Englert Theater in Iowa City, November 1st. Glenn Washington will be here, and you can be there too. Tickets are still available for the show. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is Glenn Washington. He is the host of Snap Judgment, which is a weekly public radio show. It's a storytelling show. There's always a theme. There's always music. It's always fascinating. You can hear it Saturdays at noon on Iowa Public Radio News and Studio One stations. And Snap Judgment is coming to Iowa live on stage at the Englert Theater in Iowa City on November 1st. There are still tickets available to that performance. And Glenn, on each show, you share so much of yourself. I'm curious, is there some part of Glenn, is there some part of you that's off limits to the show?
Sure. Sure. You know, I think that the part that you sometimes will hear in the show is the part that I've processed. And the best way that I process things is probably through narrative. And the things that I haven't processed yet, maybe you will hear later. maybe I understand it a little bit better, understand these connections a little bit better. It's really interesting that, you know, when we first came out of the gate, we wanted to tell these big, huge stories with these big, huge fact patterns and this and that. But I have discovered as we've matured as a show that the stories that have the most resonance with our listeners are oftentimes not the ones with the grandest fact pattern. They're the ones where you open up the most. And the best storytelling often comes from picking at scabs. And those things, that's hard to do. And even though I know that, I know it academically as well as anyone on earth could know it, when I sit down at a blank computer, sometimes I still recoil. Sometimes, all the time, I still recoil from that process sometimes, from picking at those scabs, from looking at those aspects of myself that I tend to shy away from, that I want to look away from. That's still hard. And I can't believe that after this time, it still hasn't gotten any easier, but that's the truth. It has not.
You have a lot of pressure too. I mean, you're an epiphany a week is kind of your job in some ways. Does that get overwhelming?
My family will say that my Sunday nights are, I'm to be avoided. as I try and go through it. I mean, I try to get better about it, but yeah, that I think that honestly, one of the biggest, catalysts of creativity has been the deadline. It has to go out. There's no question about it. I gotta get it done. And sitting at that blank computer screen, knowing that somebody better fill it up and I'm the only one that's sitting there, that really is it's been my greatest challenge, but my greatest blessing as well. From
powerful
an artist's
motivation.
Point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that started that whole contest, talent search, that got you into public radio was the feeling that public radio was too white and too uptight. And I think progress has been made. Some progress has been made, but I'm guessing that there are a lot of people who might hear me say that and think, yep, that sounds like public radio to me. So I'd love to hear your take on it. When you listen to public radio, I mean, we do lack a diversity of voices still.
Yeah. That's true. And so, I don't know. I mean, I think that I think it's oftentimes it's a matter of deciding what the who it is that we're talking to. And I don't know why, you know, because I started like in public media about 10 years ago now. And I don't know that the numbers shift has been as dramatic as we might like to pretend that it has been. Because I don't know that we've defined our audience. We've really defined our audience the way that we say we have. And I just think that it's so important to have the makers look like the listeners, or you don't get the listeners that you want. I think it's just really, really important. I think it's just something we have to keep deciding every day that that's what we want to do.
So many of the voices in public radio have come up through the ranks from internships, a lot of them unpaid internships, although many places are paying interns now. But they come from public radio listening families. They had to know what public radio was to find their way into public radio. And, you know, when you got into public radio, it was because of this host search. But that's not where people usually start. I mean, that was an experiment and a process that worked. And we have this wonderful, wonderful program to thank for it. But that's not a solution. So do you have, I know that it's not your job to find the solution to this problem, but I'm sure you've given it some thought. What do you think public radio can do to draw in people who can climb that ladder?
Well, I think we have to, first of all, make sure that we're producing material that is publicly accessible. I don't necessarily think that the shows that we put on public radio are trying very hard to reach outside our little narrow sliver. And even with my own show, I know that it was very, very tough going to get it on public media. And one of the things that we had to do early on was go first to the podcast. This is early podcasting. First go to the podcasting audience and get them excited about it. And then maybe they would talk to their local public radio station about it. The listeners who were podcast listeners were our biggest advocates on a lot of public radio stations. You know, we started off with 22 stations for the show, and that grew eventually, but it grew, it felt like, you know, we were fighting every step of the way. And a lot of it was because the public radio organizations didn't feel like we sounded like public radio. And that was tough. That was tough to hear because, again, we wanted to make something as smart as anything you'd ever hear anywhere. But have different voices that would be highlighted. And, you know, and you see it even like some of the comments that we get even now from, you know, let's say public radio stalwarts that will say, you know, I'm not sure if I like that Ebonics that guy talks in and whatever it may be. So I say all that to say that right now I think we have a real chance because what happened with the podcast explosion is that lots of people who might not have been able to build their chops in a public radio setting are doing it in another setting. They're saying, I'm going to make a show. I'm going to get my internship available. I'm going to do this thing anyway. And a lot of people are making some amazing things right now. And I think that by finding that stuff, identifying it, maybe honing it and crafting it, sculpting it a little bit more, that's where the next round of public radio hit shows is going to come from. And that's where the next round of public radio talent is already coming from. It used to be that, you know, I thought that Snap would be best heard on a soundstage somewhere with a glass of port. But I know that a lot of public radio listeners, they now take public radio as make it as portable as any other media is. And they listen to it on with their phones. And that's where the frontier is. We're competing right now, not just against other public radio shows. We're competing against every other type of media that's out there. And that means this show competes against Breaking Bad, against Black Panther, whatever it is that's going to take up your attention, we have to be relevant so that you give us our little sliver of your week. And it's a great gift when someone gives you an hour of their time. We have to make sure that we're as relevant as we can be. And the only way we can do that is by, as a public radio medium, I think, is by telling a public story and really leaning into that in the best way that we know how. And a lot of organizations are doing just that. I think that it's not fair to paint all of public media with the same broad brush, because a lot of groups have reached out and said, we're going to make this show, our sliver of the world. We're gonna reach out and bring more people in.
You said Snap Judgment Live is a completely different thing. So when people come to see you live on stage, what are they going to see?
What they're going to see is oftentimes when we have a story on a regular Snap Judgment show, they're told by people who would never get on front of anybody's stage. They're people who've lived an experience, but they need maybe our producers to help them craft it. A 10-hour interview might become a 10-minute piece, but we flip the script for Snap Judgment Live. The people who come out to tell stories for Snap Live are maybe the best performance storytellers on the planet. They will make you laugh, they will make you cry, and they're backed by the beats of Bell's Atlas, helping them tell the story in real time. And no storyteller tells the story the same way twice, and that's why the whole process is kind of like a duet between the band, the storyteller, and the audience. Everybody kind of contributing what they do and making this experience, this real immersive experience happen. And it just takes you away. And I kid you not, come to Snap Judgment Live. You will laugh. You will cry. You will laugh some more. It's going to put you somewhere else. You're going to get in someone else's shoes. You're going to get in someone else's skin and wear that around for a while. We love it. We love it when public radio sees themselves at this event, because they don't look like the way they thought they did. When you look around a Snap Judgment audience, it looks quite different from what you might expect a public radio audience to look like.
Well, we can't wait. Glenn, thank you so much.
I thank you so much for being here, for letting me be on the show. And we cannot wait to rock Snap Live.
Glenn Washington, host of Snap Judgment. You can hear Snap Judgment Saturdays at noon on IPR News and Studio One stations. And Snap Judgment Live is coming to Iowa City November 1st on the stage at the Englert Theater in Iowa City. You can still get tickets to the event. You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.